Shout out to my listeners out there. This is your host, Moshe Canty, host of the podcast Conscious Moves. I hope everybody out there is staying focused, remaining healthy, and making the right moves on their proverbial board. Today is episode 5, and we're going to talk today about a very controversial issue, one that always arouses everybody, gets everybody all riled up, all crazy, and want to get all deranged and strange and all that. I hope, though, that by discussing this topic, we're able to, you know, come to terms with some of the things that we need to work on individually as well as collectively. So this is why today I titled this particular podcast, today's title for this for the podcast as is the disrespect of black women conscious or unconscious behavior. And the reason why I felt like this was needed was because of the state of affairs that I've seen since coming home last month, where everybody's head is at. And I just wanted to, you know, touch up on a few things. But before I get to that, let me first shout out my family for supporting me throughout my life. Although I was a knucklehead at some point, I definitely want to, you know, give credit and props where props is due. So thank you for that. And I want to shout out my friends, those that continue to support me no matter my shortcomings. And lastly, I want to shout out the brothers behind the wall, brothers who last one I just left are going through it in there. I want to send my love to them and make sure that they know that I'm continuing to carry on this legacy, to carry this torch. And what they expect for me to do is to continue to hold that banner high and not lose focus. So they don't have no worry about that. I'm going to stay very much focused. Last week, I know I asked everybody to do one thing in particular, and that was if you had something that you felt you needed to work on. I used an example of somebody smoking cigarettes, but it could have been anything. Only you know what that issue may be. And I just wanted to know if anybody themselves worked on something in particular that they know they need to work on that ultimately can make them a better person. Right. And the reason why I felt like that was important, and we know why it's important, is because we have a lot of destructive or counterproductive behavioral habits that are kind of, you know, that are detrimental to our health, that hinder us from being the best that we could potentially be. So with that being the case, how many of us have actually taken the time out to work on ourselves over this last week? Again, only you know that, unless you share that with somebody, your significant other or a loved one and what have you. Only you know that. Well, for me, I'm going to keep it 100 with my audience, man. Everybody who knows me knows that I love snacks. You know, I at times I can overindulge. Man, I bust some snacks down. When I mean snacks, talking about like junk food. And I know it's not good for me. But I have a very good friend of mine, I say that consciously, who said to me, "Yo, Mo, how can you be on some conscious move thing when you eating snacks?" He said this to me. And I said, "You know what? You're absolutely right." I said, "I exercise. I eat right. But sometimes I just want to eat a snack. What's wrong with that? I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm putting a donut, an Innamans donut in my mouth. I get that. I know I'm going to the ice cream parlor to go get some ice cream. I know that. I can't get no ice cream." And I think a lot of times what happens is that we get into the poor habit of setting unrealistic goals. I don't want anybody to get the impression that I'm trying to put any unrealistic expectations upon you. Don't get the impression that I'm doing that, because I'm not doing that. That's not what my intentions are, because none of us are perfect. So, yes, I do like snacks, but I don't overindulge with snacks to the extent that that's all I'm eating. I don't not work out, but eat snacks when I should be working out. So the point that I'm saying is this, that yes, over the last week, I've told myself, I've taken advice from this individual who I consider not only to be a friend, but a brother of mine. And I said, you know what? You're right. I'm going to be more conscious of that. I'm sharing this with y'all because just because I'm sitting here as the host of Conscious Moves don't mean I got everything figured out. I told y'all that a couple of weeks ago that would be very disingenuous. So it's all of us can continuously uplift the next person. And that's what this is all about. So he said to me, he said, yo, man, you know, we're going to start doing this Conscious Move thing, man. We might as well be all in. I said, yeah, let's do it. Let's go all in. Let's do it. So we're making conscious decisions all the way around the board. Does that mean that I've totally cut snacks out my diet? Absolutely not. I had an Innemann's donut last night, the pumpkin joint. Facts. I'm going to keep it 100. I was all in. With some ice cream. Yeah, I did that. But my thing is this, man. I'm running 5 miles a day. I'm working out. I can have a donut when I want to. So I told this same individual who smokes, yo, bro, you work out. But you telling me that I need to be more conscious, but right after you work out, you lighten up. So he said that he was going to be more conscious of his smoking habits, which meant that he would now start working on removing that from his daily diet. And I would focus on the food that the snacks that I take on a daily basis that are no good for me as well. So we're gonna keep pushing each other to be better people. And I'm thankful for that advice from him. So, you know, all praise is due to Allah for that. So moving forward, I hope that, again, each and everybody who's listening to my voice can just tap into yourself just a little bit more to just see what it is that you need to work on. And hopefully, you know, you'll move your pieces accordingly and make better decisions. So again, going back to what the title of today's topic is the disrespect of black women conscious or unconscious behavior? Now, I know that this is a very controversial topic, but why do I want to talk about this? Why is this important? All right, so check it out. So when I was incarcerated, we used to play chess with each other behind the gates because in many instances, I spent over 15 years of my time incarcerated in 23-hour lockdown, which means that I'm locked down for 23 hours a day and I'm only out for one hour. Of my 22 years in prison, 15 of those years was spent under some very, very stressful conditions. And that was for, you know, a number of reasons, but inshallah, one day we'll get to that, but right now that's not what I'm going to discuss. But under those circumstances, we found very creative ways to interact with each other. And when I say we, I'm talking about at the time, you know, my fellow brothers who shared those confines with me, right? And how we you know did the best to pass time was that we played chess with each other. The normal way to play chess is that you're sitting across your opponent. When you're behind a gate, you can't see your opponent. In some instances, you got to yell. You got to make up. First of all, you have to make your board up. And what we used to make our board up, you could make it with a piece of paper. You could make it with the back of a writing pad. You would make your 64 squares. You would color, get a pen and color your whatever spaces on the board are black. You would color those and you would make your pieces out of paper. I knew some individuals who were so creative, they made their chess pieces out of soap. All right. Well, however you chose to do that, we would have to then yell our numbers out to each other on the gate. So for instance, I would say 13. If I'm white, I would say 13 to 29. And if this individual was black, he would say 53 to 37. I would say 12 to 28. And he would say 63 to 46, and so on and so forth. This is how we would pretty much move our pieces, right? But we're yelling this to each other on the gate while other people are having conversations and so on and so forth. So what I noticed that when we were playing chess, if you notice, every board on the piece has a name. You have your pawns, you have your rooks, you have your horses, you have your bishops, you have your king, you have your queen. But what I noticed was that we all of us, myself included, we had a very, very poor habit when we're in the heat of playing a game of chess, we would refer to the queen as a B-I-T-C-H. So I'm not going to use that term. I'm just, for the sake of the podcast, my audience, I'm not going to say the B word. I'm just going to simply refer to it as the B word. So, as opposed to saying, yeah, yo, 13, my queen takes, or my pawn takes your queen, or my queen goes to 46. We would say stuff like, my B goes to 58. Check. Yeah, my B checks, takes your B. This is how we was referring to the queen on the board. And I used to always say to myself, while I'm listening, not so much while I'm playing, because when you're in the heat of the game, you don't really pay attention to what you're saying. But when you're on the outside looking in, you have a different perception of it. Because sometimes, to prevent individuals from arguing about what piece was moved where, you always need a third party to watch the game. So I might be that third party watching two other individuals play the game so that they don't get into an argument on the gate about what piece went where and who said what. But I always noticed in this case that we would refer to a queen as a B. And I'll be like, yo, why is it that we're referring to a queen as a B? Where does this come from? And I used to ask individuals on the gate. I used to be like, yo, bro, let me ask you a question. Why do you keep referring to the queen as a B? It's a queen. So I wanted to look a little bit deeper into this. Where does this come from? Where does us referring to queens as bees come from? And it made me look a little bit deeper. And I also started doing the knowledge, as we say, you know, listening, observing, paying attention to, you know, my surroundings, to the extent that I would see individuals getting their visits and coming back, or showing individuals or talking about their loved ones, and hearing individuals refer to the women in their lives as bees. Not only the women in their lives, but other women as well. So whether it was their girlfriend who was coming to visit them, whether it was their baby mama who was coming to visit them, whether it was females who they've dealt with in the past, whether it was females in the music industry and so on and so forth, everybody was a bee. And I used to be like, damn, nobody is a queen. Not anybody has the respect or the title of being a highly revered woman in your life. So that made me think, like, damn, man, why is it? And I was caught up in that culture as well. So when I say I'm referring to he or them, I'm also talking about myself as well. So excuse me, I don't want to give the impression that somehow I was outside looking in, like, no. I was referring to women with the B word too. And may Allah forgive me for that. But that's the truth. I'm just keeping it 100. So I'm sitting back analyzing all of this, and I'm saying, damn, why is it that we're referring to women other than these highly revered, or dignified titles, you know? And I said, damn, man, something's wrong with this picture. At what point of our people's history did we begin to just denigrate and use these derogatory terms? Did it always exist? Has it always existed? Has it always been some, you know, to the extent that, yo, this is what it is. Like, this woman is just a bee. So I wanted to know where the origins of this derived from. And what I came to find out is that, see, we have a very unique relationship. And I'm saying we, I'm talking about Black people in America. Very unique we know our history in terms of the connection with those from the past who were forcibly, you know, removed from their ancestral homeland and brought to a land that many of them never, you know, even knew existed. But that happened as a result of force being plundered, among other things. But a part of that process was the breakdown of the family structure, which was key. In order to enslave these individuals, they had to first kidnap them with superior war technology. But then in order to maintain, which was to keep those people enslaved, they had to go through a whole nother experience. All right. And a part of that experience is was the breakdown of the black woman. And one thing that they used to do, meaning the slave makers, that is, in breaking the black woman down, was that they would rape her in the presence of the black man. They would rape the black woman. It could have been a man's mother. It could have been a man's daughter. It could have been a man's wife or aunt or whomever. But the black woman was raped, sexually abused, in front, sexually assaulted in front of the black men. And this was used on one hand to strike fear into the heart of that black man. And on the other hand, it was used as a strategy in which the black man would then lose respect for the woman. In this case, the black man would no longer see the woman as an object of reverence, but instead as a symbol of sexual objectification and denigration. This was also done in other ways as well. So let me just state that for the record, that wasn't the only tactic that the slave makers used in order to break down the family structure and ultimately break down the man, the woman, the child, and so on and so forth. Another way in which it was done was the male was used as like a stud. Like you have a horse who are known as studs. That's where that term comes from. And a stud was a horse that can impregnate as many female horses, mares, that's what the term is called, as possible. So that the owners of those horses can get profit from those animals. The same thing applies for the slaves and the slave makers. They did this to the male slaves. So what they would do is that the male slaves would have sexual relations with as many female slaves as the slave maker would approve of. And by doing so, they would then get impregnated. And this would then mean that more children would, you know, populate the plantation. And what this would mean with that, this would be a more profit for the slave owner. So this was done to, again, demoralize, devalue, denigrate the woman in the eyes of the man. So the man became like this sex symbol, this stud on the slave plantation. All he was known as in many instances was the guy who was bedding down many women. I'm not saying that this is where the origins of this in the black community derive from. I don't have knowledge of that. What I'm simply suggesting is the unique experience of how the black woman was devalued, where her place as a symbol of high reverence was denigrated from a queen, one of respect, to one of disrespect. So you know, I look at that, and that made me begin, when I began doing some research and studying and stuff like that, I saw that historically, our women were traditionally revered. Whether you know, we can go as far back as Queen Nzinga of Angola, and even further back with Hatshepsut in ancient Kemet, or we can go, you know, to Cleopatra. We can go to I said Nzinga already, Cleopatra, among others. All right. Excuse me for the names escaping me right now. But my point, Queen Tai of ancient Kemet. And so my point is this, though, that traditionally our women were revered. And even coming on upward into civilizations, ancient civilizations like the people of Ghana, the people of Mali, the people of Sangyi, even going that far back, black women were always revered. They were never looked at as these quote unquote sex objects, right? That didn't mean that sex wasn't a big issue. It just simply means that they were not denigrated, devalued. Their place in society overall was significant. They were not looked in terms of they were not referred to in a derogatory manner. Let me just say that. All right. How are the events from the slave experience interconnected with how black women are perceived today? And what I mean by that is that when I asked the question, I said, how is it that we refer to the queen on a chessboard as a bee? And then that then also carries over into our life on a daily basis. I mean, you know, does that owe its origin to the slave plantation? I'm of the opinion that it does. All right. It's a theory that I can prove. I can back it up with scientific evidence. One, I just proved shown the denigration of the woman on the slave plantation. And I can show the woman's place in America, in the shores of America, the black woman in particular, and the Latina woman. I mean, it's the same. You know, we're going to speak specifically about, you know, one group of individuals. And I'm, black women, I'm speaking in its entirety. Right. We're not going to divide that up. Right. When I speak about that, I can speak about that denigration of that person itself being denigrated and devalued by the white patriarchal system. All right. So but how is that connected? How is those incidents of the past connected to those of the present? So let me just say this. Today, we still objectify women, right? And we still refer to them as bees, right? We refer to them. Actually, we're referring to them as somebody other than they truly are, because I'm sure that they already have names, right? Some of their names are Jaquasia, Shalonda, Tamika, you know, Jeanette, right? Imana, Nzinga, Andrea, right? So I'm just being real. There's many names that we can, you know, use to highlight this point. So why the hell are we calling them by anything other than their names? So if by doing so, then we're referring to them other than somebody than they truly are. I had a conversation with my man today, and he was like, "Yo, Mo, this is what you're going to be talking about today?" I said, "Yeah, bro." He said, "Yo, bro, but I'm going to keep it 100 with you, man. I can't see myself referring to the women at my life other than bees." I'm like, "Whoa, what you mean by that?" He said, "Yeah, the women in my life are bees. So when I refer to my bee as a ride or die, yo, she with me, she in the street, she got my back, she my eyes, she my ears, she willing to basically go all the way in, yo, she, that's my bee. When I'm arguing with, I'm like, yo, bee, what the hell is wrong?" I said, "Well, let me ask you a question. Do you refer to your mother as a bee?" "Nah." He said, nah, because my mom's ain't in the streets with me." I said, "So somebody got to be in the streets with you for you to refer to them as a B word? That's what you telling me? That's what it is? Why she just can't be Tamika that get busy? Right? Right? Why she just can't be, you know, my girl that get that's all in, right? Why she can't be like that? Why does she have to be a derogatory term? Because when we use that term, it's derogatory." But then he was like, "Yo, you right. When I'm using that term, I might be unconscious when I'm using it, but I'm conscious when I'm in the presence of my moms and my grandmoms, because I won't use that word." I said, "Oh, so you go from being unconscious in one setting to being very conscious in another. Selective consciousness." But he brought up another point, and I had to agree with him. He said, "Yo, Mo, but what about other women who refer to themselves as bees? How do we then respect them when they refer to themselves as such?" I said, "You got a valid point. Because as soon as you walk up to a woman and refer to her as a B word, she going to swear you said the worst word on the earth to her. But let her be well, girlfriends. Girl, You crazy, B. Yo, all that stuff. Girl, you B. Girl, that. What, girl, you. Listen, this is my B right here. Y'all know how y'all be doing. So don't play no games. Y'all use that B word more than we do. So why is it a double standard? Why is it that you guys can use the word, but we on the other hand cannot? So is it really us denigrating the black woman? Or is it that the black woman is denigrating herself? I'm of the opinion that we're all a part of the problem. So if I'm using it to refer to another woman as a bee, and she's using it to refer to herself and others as bees, then we all a part of that problem. It's an issue we all need to work on. All right? It's no secret that our people are where they are at in society, that we are at the bottom. It appears as if every negative can be, acquainted with us. Okay? Now, I'm not saying that we have not come a long way in terms of where we began in this country to where we are at. I'm saying that I have the belief in my heart that we as a people overall, in spite of the progress that we have made, we can make more progress if we just are more conscious on the decisions that we're making in the proverbial game of life. I'm going to say that because I just feel that way. I think it's important that we not refer to each other in these derogatory terms. It doesn't necessarily mean that a woman who has a 9-to-5 can't refer to another woman as a B word, and those two women can't be successful. We know successful women that use the term, or whatever the case may be like that. But what does that ultimately say about us as a people when, in spite of our ability to be able to succeed in the face of such adverse conditions, we do it by still being derogatory towards one another? That just means that we are a remarkable group of individuals. So my advice is not that we try to be this perfect, pristine type of people. Nah, I'm not even suggesting nothing like that. I'm simply saying, just as I always do, which is just to be more conscious in how we refer to each other. Because in my mind, I'm saying as long as we can see each other in a positive light, we won't refer to each other in negative terms. All right. As long as we see each other in a negative light, then we won't refer to each other in positive terms. Okay. It takes us raising our awareness and our level of consciousness to the point where we can now start, seeing in this person the best that we possibly can see. All right. And we don't have to take anything away from who we are. We are who we are. We are great people. It's no reason. I mean, it's not a surprise that other cultures of the world are particularly, the white culture, the white American culture, the Eurocentric culture, right? The global Eurocentric culture has taken everything that it possibly can in terms of our skills, and then have used it to empower themselves. And they've done that in spite of us using derogatory references against each other. But what if, we can envision a time in which we begin to see ourselves in a better place. And that starts with how we not only envision it, but how we then follow it up with acting and treating each other a certain way. That's the only thing I'm suggesting, that we're more conscious of that. Going back. So years ago, I would never use the N word. I was on some big time thing with the N word, but it didn't start with that. The problem with me was that I wasn't conscious of the words that I used out of my mouth. So every sentence I would say, you heard what I'm saying? Nah, I'm saying. You heard? Nah, I mean. Yo, that N this. Yo, that B this. So one day I was on the phone with my late mother, and I called her, and she said, Moshe, why is it that every time you ask, every sentence you say, you ask me, do I hear you? You heard. Obviously, I accepted your call, So I'm listening to you. You're not conscious of what you're saying? The answer was no. I wasn't conscious of what I was saying. Another time I was in the box, so I used the word so much that there was a lot of good in being a part of the gang. And one thing of the good, because I spoke about that weeks ago, there was some good. And the good was that individuals, there were a group of individuals within the group who continuously motivated you in spite of our circumstances to push to be better than you were. And I remember individuals who, one who's no longer with us, he passed away a few years ago. His name is S.I. This is my bro right here. He basically said that we should stop using this N-word. Right? And anybody who does it has to write an essay. We used to have to write a 500-word essay. We used to have to do push-ups. We would have to go on verbal fasts in which you couldn't speak for like 72 hours. There was a number of penalties that you would be subjected to in the event that you was not able to control your words. So it made you measure your words. It made you understand the power of your speech, that words are powerful, that the same way we speak positively, we can speak negatively. The same way positive words can have an impact on somebody, the same way negative words can have an impact on you as well. So we're referring to each other in negative terms. This has unintended consequences and intended consequences as well. The intended consequences is that you can see, you know, you referring to somebody, if they're present, you continue to do that. It might be a fight. You know, yeah, you, man, shut up, B. And next thing you know, it's lit. Y'all, it's all a party. We all getting it in, right? But then it's going to have unintended consequences as well. Because now if you teach this to a child, this child then grows up and then now becomes so desensitized to respect and positive energy that this child is only perpetuating a cycle of destruction in the community. And that's what we have to be mindful of, the unintended consequences of our actions. And what I learned years ago was that you have to understand the importance of speech. You have to understand the importance of speech. In the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he speaks about eloquent speech. Eloquent speech, meaning he created eloquent speech. Eloquent speech was taught to us. And what that means is that we speak the best words. All right. And by doing so, this creates positivity in an environment, harmonious relationships in a community. And this raises the value or the appreciation of the community. But as long as we continue to use derogatory terms when referring to each other, this then doubt depreciates the value of the community. And we no longer have any respect, any honor, any reverence towards each other. We just become a bunch of savages in pursuit of happiness. So we should be very mindful of that. In closing, I just want to leave us with that right there. Again, if you're striving to be a better individual, a better person, then it's nothing wrong with that. It's nothing wrong with that. Continue to do so. If you aren't striving to be a better individual, I'm not going to say it's something wrong with that. But I'm going to just say it's something wrong with that. We should be striving to be better, right? But I'm not going to beat you down with that. I don't want to make it appear as if I'm jumping on top of you for the sake of doing so. No, what I'm saying to you is that you can be better. Just put one conscious thought in your mind to be better and then take a conscious step towards doing that. And hopefully you'll get to where you're trying to go. So my message today to everybody is that we're going to continue to refer to each other in the negative, the B's and the N's, and we're going to still argue these controversial issues about whether or not they're terms of endearment and they don't mean nothing. Okay, that's fine and dandy. All right, stand your ground, do what you have to do in terms of whatever you think your beliefs are. I'm not trying to change your beliefs. I'm simply saying that if we truly desire to be the best that we possibly can be, then I'm of the school that says that maybe we should begin being conscious of how we refer to one another. So this week, I'm going to close out with our slogan, our motto, as we use every week. Well, I strive to use it every day, which states that a conscious mind. Excuse me. I almost forgot the slogan. Pardon me, y'all. A conscious mind makes the best moves. Think about that. A conscious mind makes the best moves. All right. So what that means is that the more conscious that you are, the likelihood exists that you'll make better, more responsible, more conscious decisions. So hopefully, man, something that I said in here could be of benefit to you as an individual or could be of benefit to us all. With that, I close out. Y'all stay healthy out there. I love y'all. Assalamu alaikum. Shout it out, y'all. This is Moshe Canty, host of the podcast Conscious Moves. This segment is sponsored by Mighty Healthy. Listen, one of the best conscious moves that you can make is to invest in your physical health. Mighty Healthy will help you do just that. It strengthens your immune system, improves digestion, reduces inflammation due to its high concentration of antioxidants, and replenishes your body with the essential vitamins and minerals it needs daily. Go to MightyHealthy.com, and to get 20% off of your purchasing price, type in the code CONSCIOUS. Tell them that Moshe sent you.